I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of Tom Lucy Plus One. My name is Tom Lucy, for those of you who don't know. I'm a comedian, I'm 21 years old, and this is my podcast where I chat to different people from the world of entertainment every week. And this week, my guest is the fantastic Ethan Barnett, who is otherwise known as 10 Tons. Ethan is a incredibly talented up-and-coming singer and songwriter, and almost exactly the same age as me, I think. And he was signed to Warner Brothers at the age of 19, which is pretty incredible. And he came over to my flat a couple of weeks back, and we had a great chat. He comes from a very musical family and background. His brother is the singer George Ezra, and his dad was in a band, and we chat about all of that stuff. So I think you're going to really enjoy this. This is my chat with 10 Tons, who's otherwise known as the brilliant Ethan Barnett.
My brother does one.
Yeah, yeah. Is he going to have you on?
Yeah, at some point.
Is
it? It's kind of like, because we're going to wait until my album's done, or there's at least a release date, and then kind of
yeah
talk about, so it's like we can talk about the album in it, and hopefully.
Have you got a release date or?
No, I did, and then I started telling everyone, and now it's changed. So I was a bit like,
oh, what? Because you told everyone, or?
No, like, they just constantly change. Like, it's just the way that it goes. Like,
is that who's the record label that you're?
Warner Brothers.
Fucking hell, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that the same one that your brother's with?
No, he's with Columbia on Sony.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just like, it's just constantly changing because it's like, because it doesn't need to have fixed dates. It's kind of like. Just do it when things are
Yeah.
So we kind of had a date in, and it was actually we could just wait like 2 months.
Yeah.
And put it out, and you might get, but it might sell better or whatever.
That's yeah. Like, that's probably I think one of the good things about being young is that there's no like rush for anything.
I know, but I'm so impatient, man. I feel like I'm well old already. I'm like just fucking get it out because I've been signed since I was 19, and I'm 22 this year.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's been going on for fucking ages.
But yeah. But I had a similar thing with. Because I got signed to this management company, probably similar to music, when I was like 19. And then the first thing that you do as a comedian is go and do a show at Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I said to them, I want to do it now when I was 19. And they were like, just wait. There's no point doing it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you do it now and it's shit, which it likely will be, because you're 19,
yeah.
You'll just fuck your first opportunity. Yeah. So they were like, just wait. So I did it last year, having done 2 years of gigs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was good advice.
Definitely. And it's kind of like, there's just so much money involved with record deals and whatever. And like, there's lots of time that's gone into it. It's kind of like,
yeah.
But if it doesn't do well, you can very quickly get dropped and just, the kind of, that's not the end. Like, I'm sure there's other avenues to go down, but it could very quickly be like, oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool, that's done.
Do you think that's a bit more, because I don't think it's that sort of cutthroat in comedy. Is that a particular music thing or?
Definitely. And it's like, at the same, they're all fucking lovely. Like, I'm not, touch wood, I'm not expecting to get dropped. And they're like, the people that I deal with are all absolutely lovely. But like, that is always present. Like,
yeah.
Because you see so many people, like I know so many musicians that have been through and been dropped and.
Yeah.
And also like, if I did get dropped, I could still fucking make music and I'd probably make more money out of it, just put it out myself and whatever. But
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like your first album is like very important to tell how like the rest of it goes, really.
So what have you put out so far? Just
EPs? I put out an EP by myself in 2016 and then I got signed off the back of that.
Yeah.
And then since being signed we've
So 2016 you were 19?
Yeah, I was 18 when I put the thing out and then I turned 19 in August.
Yeah.
And so since being signed we've put out one EP and two singles.
Okay, right. What was the first EP called?
Lucy.
Was it? Fuck, was it really? That's good,
yeah,
man.
That's kind of like my biggest tune. so that's kind of the first thing. Yeah, that's what I put out by myself. So it's like three tracks recorded by me and some other people. And
yeah.
And off the back of that got signed. So we're going to re-release that single like next month, I think.
So if that went out when you were 18, did you write that when you were still at school?
Because I did 1 year of uni. Because I'm really young in the year, it kind of makes it seem like I'm...
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. My birthday's end of July.
Yeah.
And I was always like the youngest in the year.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm August 23rd, so like a week later I'd be in the year below, so I think of it as school years.
Yeah.
So I did a year of uni, but it kind of doesn't add up years-wise, because like, I'm only 21, but I've done a year of uni and dropped out. So I wrote it when I was at uni, yeah. So
what uni did you go to?
York St. John.
To do music?
Music production.
Music production?
Yeah.
And then you didn't like it and dropped out, or you got...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I always knew that I wanted to do my own music, but kind of never really, like... I was like, fuck it, I'll just do uni and see how that goes. And then when I was at uni, I didn't play any gigs, and I'd been playing loads at home before I left, but I just wrote loads and loads.
Yeah.
And kind of wrote a completely, like, got rid of all my old songs and, like, wrote new songs and was like, let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just started, like, producing them up and whatever, which helped, like, my experience of music production obviously helped the production of the tracks.
So. Was music always, because obviously, like, if you're a musician and your brother's a musician, do you come from a family that's, like, really into music? When you were growing up, was it always a massive
Yeah, thing? like my dad, oh, we started, by the way.
Yeah. Have an hour chat. Yeah. Great, we'll put this
on. I was like, this is weird to be talking about all this stuff not recording.
No.
I was saying something like...
Because the first couple that I did, I used to like really make it really obvious, right, we're starting now. And then it was always a bit, it was always a bit awkward.
Yeah, fair.
So I was like, the best thing to do is probably just start.
Okay, cool. But I saw the red light and I was like, I probably mean stop.
It's like I'm secretly recording you, trying to get you to like slag off your manager. Yeah.
I was like, this is quite a weird conversation to have if you're not recording it. Music was always a massive thing. So me and George, my dad's family are all from Crewe, so like northish.
Nice.
And they kind of come from that history of like brass bands, and like, so they started their own brass band. It's still going now. They had a 50-year anniversary like a few years ago. We went to that.
Your dad's in a brass band?
No, his dad was. Sorry.
Oh, okay, right.
So all of
that's so cool.
The generation before my dad. So that's kind of where the musical element in our family comes from. So they're all like, but they're all like 18 years old and married with like 3 kids. It's like they were so young when they did it. So we looked at photos and it's they just look like, well, they're younger than me now, but they've looked.
It's mental, you know. Isn't it? My granddad the other day was telling me like what he was doing when he was 21, and he was like married with like his wife was like 6 months pregnant. And they had like a house in Islington.
Yeah,
it's crazy, isn't it? Amazing. To think what like we're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
What I'm doing and what he's doing. Exactly. What he was doing. It's fucking nuts, man.
But like, yeah, we looked at pictures and they look like 40-year-old men. Like, they just had to grow up. So cause there wasn't like a teenage bit. Teenagers weren't a thing then, I don't think.
I know.
So you just had to become like a man, like an old man.
I think people did look older back in. Did you ever watch those like old? Sometimes they repeat them on like Challenge TV, like an old episode of like Gladiator or something.
I've not got a TV in my flat anymore, so I miss out on the like.
Got a TV.
Shite TV. I just watch stuff on my laptop and stuff.
Okay, right. But yeah, but they'll sometimes like repeat like a Gladiator from like the 80s or something, and it will say they'll be interviewing one of the contestants and he looks like 55.
Yeah.
He's bald and he's got like a huge beard and he's really fat and he's like he's given up on life. And then they will come up on the screen, it'll say like Alan 24.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What? He's 24? What the fuck? What the fuck happened, Alan?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's crazy, isn't it?
I wonder where he is now.
So so your dad sort of.
Yeah,
was...
so that's kind of like where the musical genes come from. So my dad always had guitars around the house.
Yeah.
And there was always music playing in the house as well, and he'd like make little mix cassette things for that, all like
mixtapes.
Car, yeah, like basically.
Yeah.
Like for car journeys and whatever. So it was like a lot of Paul Simon and Van Morrison, Bob Dylan,
yeah.
Stuff like that. So all the best stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was just always music. And because there was guitars around as well, kind of made like... It was never like, learn an instrument. Like my dad's just completely laid back, but they're just there, so you just end up picking them up.
Yeah.
So I learnt drums first and my brother learnt bass.
Did you used to play together?
Yeah, a little bit. I think we played... One Christmas we did, Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah.
That was like our one performance.
Yeah.
Like, him on bass and on drums. But yeah, I think I kind of learned drums because he kind of wrangled me into it. He was like, oh, I'm learning bass.
Yeah.
You should learn drums. That's like quite a good.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like rhythm section going on. And then from there, I kind of. It's very boring to play drums by yourself for like.
Sure, yeah.
More than 5 minutes because everything just sounds like it's like there's no song there. So then I started, yeah, it was just guitars about, so just started picking up.
So how old would you have been when you started playing guitar?
About 13. So I started drums when I was about 9.
Right.
And then, yeah, about 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So at school we had to do a project where you learnt a song and then at the end of term performed it to everyone.
Yeah.
So I think maybe everyone did Wonderwall or only we did Wonderwall, but we did Wonderwall. And my best friend at the time, Hugh, could play Wonderwall.
Yeah.
So he taught me that. And it's really easy because you basically keep your two fingers in the same place and just move the other two around.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the first.
Wonderwall's like the song that if you can play guitar a little bit, you learn how to play Wonderwall.
I know, and it was only the other day that I was like, oh shit, my first song like that was Wonderwall. That's fucking like.
That I remember when I was like 13, 14, I had guitar lessons for a bit, and the Wonderwall was literally the first song the guy taught me.
Yeah.
And then you just sort of. Everyone thinks it's incredible that you can play Wonderwall,
yeah.
And you just don't tell anyone it's the only song you can
play. Yeah, because in my head, like, the first song I remember learning myself was a song called House of the Rising Sun, which is like an old, like, traditional
that's
blues
such a cool
tune.
First song.
I know. And then the other day I was like, oh no, fuck it, it was Wonderwall. So I stopped trying to.
I mean,
be
it's
cool
a great song, Wonderwall,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I remember going on this, like, school trip to France when I was, like, 15,
and like the whole class was like sitting around this fire at night, and then someone was like, can anyone play guitar? Yeah. And then someone went, oh, Tom can.
Nice.
So I was like, oh, fuck. It's going to get revealed I can only play Wonderwall. So I was like, well, let's do Wonderwall, shall we? So we like did Wonderwall, and then someone went, what else can you do? And I was like sweating. So I was like, why don't we just do Wonderwall again? Yeah. I think it's a nice, it's really fitting with the evening. Let's just keep doing Wonderwall. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, big tune, that.
So did you then like go and do gigs? What age did you start doing gigs?
So like I started writing tunes pretty soon after playing, like starting to learn guitar. I don't know why, it wasn't like, again, it was just like, just did it. It was just like, made sense to me. And like, I'd always like sang a bit, so it kind of made sense in that respect. And then I wasn't playing gigs until I was about 16, I think. And just playing in little pubs around. I'm from a town called Hartford, which is like just north of North London.
Yeah.
So I just started playing gigs around there, really. And like playing at my friends, like, parties or like little events they were putting on, like not like house parties, but if they had like a
house party, like a
fucking hall or whatever, I'd go and play.
House parties would be great, though, wouldn't
it? Well, we did this thing last year that I did, and like I went and played at fans' house parties.
Yeah.
And it seems like a really good idea on paper, and then you get there, and I was like, oh shit, I'm the wanker with the guitar at the party. Yeah. Like, I'm the digger.
Who knows Wonderwall?
Exactly. And it only clocked when I got to the first one, and I was like, oh man. It kind of was all right because they'd actually asked me.
Right,
to do it. It wasn't just like...
That's very different to like some dick at a party going, turn Spotify off.
Yeah.
I've got a guitar.
No, they're the worst people. But yeah. So
did
you
come into London to do gigs at that age?
No, so I kind of was just playing, and it was all just for fun, really. I was just making tunes, and I'd like make them because there was a studio at the school I went to. They had like an amazing music block, so I had a recording studio.
Oh, wow.
So we got taught that at A level. I did music technology, so we got taught that, how to use the studio. So I just used to, in all my free periods and all my lunch breaks, just go up there
with
mates, and we just make tunes and whatever.
So
I just put it on SoundCloud, it's just for fun. And then, so then I went to uni, and when I dropped out, that's when I was like, this is exactly what I want to do, like performing. So I properly like stepped up a gig, because I was just unemployed and like don't know what I'm doing. So I started coming to open mic nights in London and whatever like that.
And that's when you met your manager and all that
stuff? No, that was... So I kind of had a year, maybe a year and a half, where I was working in a pub and working at an after-school club and just doing open mic nights whenever and booking my own gigs and whatever. And then I put out that EP and put it on Spotify. And then that's how I met my manager and label and everyone like that.
So you were 18, 19?
18, yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I'd
You're
like,
signed to Warner Brothers at 18.
But yeah, it was like the week, I was 18 when I signed, and then that week I turned 19.
But you can still say you were 18 when
you
signed.
No, maybe I wasn't. Maybe I was 19.
Just say
anyway,
18.
Yeah.
18.
Yeah, I was 13 years old.
That is proper crazy though.
Yeah, it was like, it was a mad, like, looking back, it happened very quickly, but it felt like absolutely fucking ages. Because I'd like dropped out of uni and had that ages and ages of just like trying and doing stuff. And I was like sending my CDs off to labels and like, just finding all the contacts I could and just sending stuff off.
And when they signed you, were they like, did they have a plan and they were like, let's put an album out in 2 years or?
Yeah, like that's kind of like the unwritten, unless they're signing you and you're already like a known act, which I don't know when that would ever happen, that scenario, but like that's pretty much the standard like thing of it anyway.
So they give you some time to... So they then give you, like, recording studios and stuff to...
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I was never... I didn't want to put an album out there anyway. Like, the songs that I've written recently are, like, much better than, obviously, 2 years ago, because you get better every day kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of just, like... And then you get, like, a live agent to get your gigs and whatever, and so you start doing gigs. And then I, like... So it is just me, and I write all the tunes and whatever. And then I've got a band for live gigs as well, so it's kind of then... teaching them the songs and getting them involved and whatever. So.
And then they put you out on tour with supporting people. And
So this year's the first like big chunk of supports I've done. So I did like 2 months solid from like end of January to the end of March, I think.
That was supporting?
A guy called Rat Boy. And then we had 2 weeks off. And then we supported Stereophonics on their arena tour around the UK.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, we did like 2 nights at Wembley Arena. It was insane. So
when was that, earlier this year?
Yeah, it was February, I think.
Wow, March. Man.
It was like a whole arena tour, so we just like played the like most nuts venues around the whole of the UK.
Yeah.
Like, ticked them all off in like 2 weeks, and I was afterwards, I was like, what just happened? Like,
was it? Were you the only support, or was there another?
Yeah, it's just us.
Fucking nuts, man. How long did you do?
It was about, I think it was 13 dates, so 13 gigs, and then there's obviously like days off and whatever.
So did you do what, like half hour before them, or?
Yeah, it's a half hour.
Fucking.
It was absolutely amazing.
What was the biggest gig you did on the tour?
I think it was Birmingham Arena, I think, which is 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And then we did the two nights at Wembley, is 10,000 a night, I think, so that's 20,000 over the two nights.
Probably. And you've not even put an album out?
No.
Is that quite unusual?
Not really. It's kind of like the whole thing changes all the time, like the music industry. I don't know, I don't really know much, but now you've got a kind of, I think back in the day you could put an album out and then kind of,
yeah,
that be your like CV and like get new fans from that, whereas now I think you've got to be at like a fairly substantial place to then put an album out,
yeah,
so that it does well, because otherwise you're kind of
fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's gonna hear it. It's kind of like, then I supported a guy called Tom Grennan.
Yeah.
So we had 2 days off between the Stereophonics tour and the Tom Grennan tour.
And that ended quite recently.
Yeah, it feels really recently, but I think it was about 2 months ago now, or maybe a month ago. But I don't know what I've done since then.
You just threw your TV out. And didn't leave the flat.
Yeah, exactly. Locked the doors. No, but I've just been writing a lot recently, and
which of the industry, like which side, the writing side or the touring side, which is your favourite to do?
I love writing tunes, and I'd like, definitely in the future would love to start like writing for other acts or whatever, and kind of just writing more and more different things.
Yeah.
But playing live is just like,
yeah, of course, yeah,
like next level. It's like a feeling that I don't get in any other part of my life. It's not like,
yeah,
I don't know, it's just like a very special like feeling, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on? Just the adrenaline is like,
yeah, nah. Yeah. Did you get advice from, because I supported Jack Whitehall on tour.
Oh, amazing.
And we did like an arena tour as well last year, which was like huge, exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And I remember he like sat me down before the first one and was like, look, these are some things you need to know. It's not the same as performing in a theatre. Like, these are some things you should be aware of before you do this gig. And it was so useful. Just things like, because it's such a big room, sometimes, I mean, it's not similar to you, but when you say a joke, it takes a few seconds for you to hear laughter.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't panic that it's not worked, because you'll hear it in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. And if you hadn't done that, I just would have panicked. And did you give similar thing with, did
not
they give
really,
you advice
like,
in?
I kind of quite enjoy, I just have always done it myself sort of thing. And George is really good at like, if I ever need help, he'll always be there, but never actively like doles out information, like, I don't need it sort of thing. But it's a similar thing, like when we used to sound check in the arenas, you'd like hit a drum and it'd go like going, and then you'd hear it like a second later at the very back of the room. And there's a similar kind of thing when you finish a song, it takes a second for like to hear anything back, and it's like,
oh, it's weird how some of those big rooms as well have really good sound and some have horrific sound. Some look like because some of them are like ice rinks, literally. Like, so there was one that we did up in, I think it was Leeds or something, but the arena is normally an ice rink. Normally they have
the
ice hockey in it. So what happens is when people are sitting literally on the ice, over the ice, because of the heat from them, this like steam rises. So you get like above the seating on the ground, like this cloud above people.
Weird.
And it was so fucking
weird.
Yeah, you just see their heads like above this like cloud. So it's just like some of those rooms are like, the sound is,
I guess it's different when you're like telling jokes, because like you're like so actively engaging, like it's like I'm speaking to all of you, whereas when I'm playing music it's kind of like people can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, when you're a support as well, you can get, sometimes it's not amazing because people aren't to see you.
I can
like
tell me about that.
Yeah. Like, they're not always the best things, but luckily,
were they nice on that tour?
The thing is with those rooms, it's just like, as long as the front two rows are into it,
I can't see anybody.
It's pitch black. And then, like, for a few bits during the songs, they'd, like, put all the lights up, and you're like, oh my god, put them down, please. Yeah. Like, I don't want to see that. But I guess it's different if you're like actually,
yeah,
I know you're trying to like engage them, which I am as well, but like in a different kind of way, I guess.
Yeah. It's well, you different. Can't chat to people in arenas. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
So you just don't do that. But
because I'm like all right with the mid, but between song chat, but not.
Do you do a lot of that?
Not really. Like I do the very bare minimum, but I'm quite, I quite like, I can clock myself kind of mumbling away at the end of my sentences because I get a bit like, oh, no one's actually listening.
Yeah.
But in an arena, that kind of just like is awful because people just hear like.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Did you just say? Yeah, I do the very, very
yeah.
least. It's not my favourite thing. I'm like, very much like, I'm there to play tunes for you. I'm not
yeah,
there
yeah.
to, like, don't know.
It's cool though, because I think it's sort of, you're sort of in like a win-win situation because no one's there to see you, you're either gonna make new fans or they're just gonna ignore you anyway.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like a win-win situation.
Exactly, and like, the information, like the knowledge that you got from Jack White or whatever, even
yeah.
if you just got that and played
yeah.
one gig, that's still like instantly your
yeah yeah
like in profit, if you get what I mean, and
yeah
like,
yeah
information
yeah
that you've gained. And it's the same with those shows. It's like if you do one and you learn one thing about like, oh, I shouldn't fucking mumble or
yeah.
like I shouldn't do that song this or that song whatever, you're
yeah.
actually like learning. And even just getting the experience of playing live is like
yeah
it's great, because I got a new guitarist at the beginning of this year, so his first gig with us was like the Ratboy tour, and so
yeah.
he kind of got like thrown in at the deep end in that sense.
Yeah.
But that was really good as well for us, just to like play together.
Yeah.
And get like, I don't know, like 40 gigs or whatever, like in the
sure,
best
yeah.
of 2 months, and just like get really really tight.
So when you're not touring, like now, do you still play gigs or do you just go for months without any gigs?
Kind of depends. It's kind of like at the moment I've not done any since the end of the tour. And kind of just because I did so much, it's like, it also costs loads of money to go do those tours. Like,
yeah.
I've got to pay the band and I've got to pay my, I've got like a sound woman and a...
Sound woman.
Yeah, I don't know what to call her, because like...
I like sound woman.
Yeah, sound woman. and
you,
then...
You should call her that in person.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Sound
I
woman.
Do, whenever I introduce her, I'm like, is that sound woman?
It sound
just
woman?
Sounds weird, I don't know. And then we've got a TM as well. So you've got to pay all the crew and, like,
yeah,
get a
yeah.
van or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, after that, it was very much, like, we've done fucking loads of touring. It's, like, there's not...
Yeah. It's such a different, like... The people I know who tour in music, it's such a... So much more effort than... There's so much production and... So many people involved. It's
well,
a real,
I guess
like,
for you, it's just, like...
It's nothing.
You and maybe, like...
Yeah,
TM
you should come and watch how... It's actually really funny how quickly it takes to sound check a comedy gig.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like you just hit the mic once
yeah.
and you go, yeah, great, all right, I'll see you in half an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas music, like, they're sound checking and setting up for hours.
Yeah. And, like, we're always really good at... Because sometimes you get given, like, 10 minutes to sound check, and then after that 10 minutes, there's 10 minutes where the doors are open, and then you play.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like you've got fucking... You've had all day just sitting around doing fuck all, like, going
yeah.
to Nando's, and then you've got, like, 10 minutes to, like... Check the whole drums, the bass, the guitar.
Yeah, it's
and
a really intense
vocals.
Demo.
Yeah, it's like fucking go. So we're quite good now. We're quite like a well-oiled machine. And just like, we can pretty quickly race through it.
Yeah, yeah. I always think that's quite weird about touring, where you sort of... Because like 23 and a half hours of the day, you're basically doing fuck all.
Absolutely nothing.
And then you have a really important, intense like half hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's back to like nothing for
yeah.
the next... It's
and
quite
it's
a weird way to live, I think.
Definitely. And also, like, after that half hour, you're, like, so, like, full of adrenaline.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly so. So then I don't sleep until, like, 2 a.m. or whatever, because I'm just, like
yeah.
buzzing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very odd, but it's great at the same time. But I've just started playing with, like, little earplugs in, so they're kind of, like, moulded to your ears. So some
yeah.
most acts now kind of... They have in-ear monitors, so instead of having the ones down there, you have it basically what, like wearing headphones.
Right.
But it means you don't damage your ears as much.
Okay.
Because if
yeah.
I'm playing and there's like a drum set behind me, that's like so loud. So I've
oh,
just
shit,
started playing
I hadn't thought of that, yeah.
Yeah, so I've just started playing ones with like that don't have any, there's no music coming in or whatever. But
they're
like
protectors.
Yeah. But it means you can't really hear the crowd as much in the smaller gigs. So you can kind of hear like very muffled, like, and you can see people like. Their mouths moving or whatever, but I don't like just don't know what they're saying.
So it must be so weird.
Yeah, and because you can kind of sometimes hear like people trying to like speak to you.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I just go, ha-ha. Like, I don't know
you
what they
just
said. Yeah, like, ha-ha. Yeah.
And if they're like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Laughing.
Yeah.
No wonder when, you're mumbling all your sentences. Yeah, exactly. You can't hear anything.
But when you have the like ones that are playing the, so like everybody else's music is coming through your ears. So
yeah, yeah.
They also have a mic that they put over the crowd so you can hear through your headphones. But the ones I have are just like...
So is the point of that to like, so you can hear it, but it's turned down?
Yeah, and it's like...
So, it's not so loud?
Yeah, and also it just means that you can hear so much better. It's like, imagine listening to something that's like...
Is it, I hadn't thought of it, but presumably it's quite dangerous every night to have that loud.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of off, it was after the Stereophonics tour, I was just like, I need to...
Because did you not have them in for that?
No, I haven't had them for like all the times I've been touring.
Do they not make you put them in or...
Like, I had to go get them made for my, like...
But did no one from the label say you should wear them?
No, like... no one else gives a shit. Like, as long as I'm playing all right gigs, like...
As long as you're making money.
In the nicest way possible. They're,
yeah,
like, they're not interested in my ear health. Like, they don't, like... They're not that bothered. So
or
I kind
even
of...
Even the sound woman. Does she not have any interest
it's
in
just
you?
Kind of...
You
know, I don't know, like... It's kind of a done thing. It's like, you should wear them. But
yeah,
certainly
yeah,
people
right.
don't. So it's like,
the people who don't, after like a decade in the industry, are they...
There you get tinnitus, which is the sound like...
Oh, shit,
you just hear
yeah.
it all the time, which I'm petrified of getting that.
Chris Martin's got that, hasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah. Loads of people have it.
But that does that ever go away?
No.
So you constantly have
so
that
that's
noise?
Why I don't have it, but I don't want it.
Isn't that like drive people mad?
I think it's like very, very faint. And I think sometimes it will get louder and sometimes quieter.
That,
but it'll just be like...
God.
Or like just a pitch in your ear. It's Baby Driver, that film.
Yeah.
But that's what he's got in the film, that like kind of high.
Oh shit,
that's
right.
That's like what he's got.
Okay.
But yeah, so I got them done because I was like,
yeah,
stupid for me not to do them.
Did someone tell you to do that or you just...
My drummer wears them and I've kind of always been like, I should probably get those.
Yeah.
And then it's like, because we'd actually done a lot of touring, I was like, okay, now I kind of... Because
yeah.
some gigs you get off stage and your ears are like ringing and it's like, this isn't...
Mm.
This isn't... so yeah, I got them made, but yeah, it's just a weird like getting used to having them in, but they're
yeah fucking hell man, that's so weird.
Yeah, so how did you start doing it all then?
Similar, well, not, I suppose I was like 15, 16 and started doing gigs around London.
Are you from London?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, basically we moved around a lot, but my dad was in the army, but yeah. And then, yeah, just started gigging open mics in pubs, like 15, 16, 17.
What kind of was the thing it was like? Had you always been telling jokes?
No, I mean, I suppose at school I was like a bit of a class clown.
Yeah, yeah.
I was always trying to make people laugh at school. I didn't really like school that much. So I just started doing that, and then... yeah, and then I went to Bristol Uni for 4 months doing drama and dropped out.
Yeah.
So I
dropout gang.
There's a theme amongst people I talk to. Everyone's dropped out of uni.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, and then the similar thing. I just met my manager when I was 18. And he signed me and said, look, if you want, you can drop out and you can do this full time and I'll make sure that you make enough money from it to, like, support yourself and...
Brilliant.
So just started doing that, and then 19, 20, I started opening for people, and then similar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
I
weird
guess it
when
seems like completely alien to me to like.
Yeah.
They're the same thing, but at the same time, completely different. Like to me, like getting up on stage and playing songs is like,
yeah
fine, but if I went up and like.
Yeah, but I think that the ins and outs of the industries are very similar.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I talk to musicians, and there's a lot of similarity, I think,
yeah.
between the way it works.
And there's also like. Because people, I think, always want to know, like, why you start doing it. But I think it's just, like, you just do it.
Yeah, I don't... It's a weird question. It's one of those things that, like, every interview I do, I'll get asked, how did you start? And I should really come up with a good answer
yeah.
to give people.
I think people want that story of, like, that moment where you, like, see
yeah.
Vic and Bob on TV. And you're like, that's what I want to do. It's like, it doesn't happen like that, I don't think.
But I never really thought about doing anything else.
Yeah,
I don't know if
yeah.
you feel the same about music. I never really crossed my mind to do anything else.
Kind of, it was always in the back of my mind of, like, deep down, that's exactly what I want to be a musician, but I kind of never I kind of just knew it in my head, so that kind of didn't matter. And then it kind of got to the point where I was like, oh, you have to decide what you want to do now. And I was like, oh, I probably should do that thing that I've always thought about doing.
Yeah, yeah. I also think, I mean, it's interesting the thing about university, because I don't know about you, but I sort of feel like, you know, on the very rare occasion where someone will ask my advice is not to go to university and just to start doing it. I think that's generally the best thing.
I'm the same, but I had one of my, like, a fan asked me, like, or no, I'd spoken about, like, dropping out once. I can't remember what it was, like,
yeah.
I did like a live stream or something. I was talking about dropping out.
Yeah.
And then she came up to me at a gig and was like, oh, I'm not going to uni because of you. And I'm gonna, like, she's an artist, and she's like, yeah, I'm just gonna go pursue my art by myself. And I was like, please don't put that on me. Like, I don't want the responsibility.
By all means, drop out, but don't tell people it was me who told you that.
She told me, I was like, oh, cool, good luck. Like, I'm sure it'll go well, but I was like, oh god.
Yeah.
I didn't realise I had that power.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard from her since? Or?
No, I'm sure she's doing fine.
She sends you another tweet going,
because
of you, this has happened.
Yeah, my dad will ring me up or something.
But it's weird, like, I don't... For all those jobs that... Because all of my mates, I don't know if you're similar, but in a situation now where they're all leaving uni and in massive debt and can't get jobs, and I feel lucky that I'm sort of 3 years into a career where I actually feel like I'm sort of... in a small way established and beginning to, like, I feel a bit secure in the sense that I've been in an industry for 3 years, and I don't know, I don't think the university thing is as important as it maybe used to be.
No, it's kind of, it's like, for my friends, it was kind of the opposite. It was, like, weird for me to go to uni, just because no one really did. Not weird, but kind of out of my group of mates,
No one really go to uni?
There was, like, three of us. So two, me and my mate, we went to the same city, different unis for the same city.
Yeah.
And then my other mate, there's like four of us that went. All the others just kind of got jobs. So a lot of them are like labourers and stuff like that. So like, I've got a mate who's a tree surgeon and one that's like a bricklayer and stuff like that. But they kind of just got those jobs and they just have trades. So they're kind of in a similar position that you kind of like, they've been working.
Tree surgeons are funny job, isn't it?
He sends me pictures, so like from Hartford, it's not that far away from London.
Yeah.
But he sent me a video once and it was him up a tree and he could see the London skyline like very
really?
Well. And he sort of like put the camera like to the ground and just see how fucking high up he is. It like made me feel tense watching the video.
Yeah.
And he goes up like, and you also like, you're up a tree, but then you're cutting it down. It's not like you're just up a
tree.
You
come
like,
down with it.
Yeah, you're like cutting down the tree that you're in. But yeah, so they're kind of in a similar position of that they kind of have got trades that they've been doing since.
I think, because most of my mates, I think, went, but they only went, I think, because they didn't really know what else to do.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a...
Yeah.
I mean, a few were like, I'm really passionate about this, but most were just like, well, I guess I'll just go to do something.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Both my parents are teachers. My dad's retired now, but they're both, like, very pro the school system.
It's
like, amazing. Like, you get free education and, like,
people
don't get that. You should make most of it.
Yeah.
So my dad's very, like... pro uni, not in a, like a pushy way, but like I think he definitely sees the benefit in going and doing that.
Yeah.
But like, because George did the same. My brother did the same. He did a year of uni and dropped out.
Yeah.
And kind of, I think that made it easier for me to drop out. My dad was never like giving me a hard time about it, but
yeah,
I think he saw George doing it. It was like he kind of gets that like it's alien to my dad to do that.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense.
Were they less worried about you because they've seen it go well for your brother?
My parents are so chilled out. They were never, for George as well, they were never like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, it wasn't ever like, it's better go on. We've always had their blessing to do whatever we want to do.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're amazing. So yeah, I probably did help, to be fair. But they're always fine anyway.
Yeah.
And like when I told them I was dropping out of my uni, they were kind of like, if you know what, like as long as, they were like, as long as you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
The reality is you're going to come home and live back in your childhood bedroom. And as long as you know that.
Did you do that for a while?
Yeah, well, like until, I've only moved to London August last year.
Okay.
So I was just living with my dad.
Yeah.
For, since I dropped out of uni. So that was like 2015 or something, 2015, I think I dropped out. Yeah. I was there for a while, so by last year, I was kind of like, it'd be nice to move out now.
Yeah, yeah. He said that.
It'd be nice if you moved out now, mate. You dropped out at uni 3 years ago.
In the nicest possible way. Yeah. Me and your mother think it'd be nice if you moved out now.
That's good.
Yeah. So do you have like, what, do you set yourself sort of career goals, or do you have things you want to achieve in the next couple of years? Or do you
kind
sort of,
I used to, I think before I was like ever doing it, I used to have much more, like I'd love to have like a number one album. That's kind of like,
yeah.
The album to me is like still, I think for musicians an album is still a very big thing, but to the wider world, I don't think it is as much like an album. It's all about singles and Spotify
now, which
isn't as album centric. It still is, but just in much less than it used to be. So like, yeah, having an album that did well. But when I was younger, you kind of had these like dreams of what would be like good things to do. But mine was always just like, as long as I can do music,
yeah,
in some capacity. And then you kind of just end up doing like those arena shows. I would never have dreamt of that because it just seems so mad. And then you end up doing it, you're like, fuck, cool. Like, yeah. You know, like, it's amazing. But I know I'm not going to be playing arenas every night. So it's like, just enjoy what happens sort of thing and just take it all.
Did you come into it being very like ambitious, or did you?
Kind of like quietly ambitious. And I like still, I'm like still am.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably partly my personality, but I'm just kind of like, kind of know what I'd like to do, but it's never like, it's never those kind of like make £1 million by the time, it's always kind of like, just as long as I'm like can do music and not like poor, like as long as I'm like, I don't know, just like can pay rent or whatever, I'm kind of cool.
I think that's the best. I think quiet ambition is the best of both worlds, isn't it?
Yeah,
because there's nothing, particularly being English, there's nothing worse than someone who's like openly ambitious. Yeah. It's ambition is great, but just, you know, if you're from England and you're English, at least sort of try and keep it to yourself a little bit.
That's kind of, that's kind of like all. Yeah.
That sounds quite like cold, but.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I just think it's like, as well, you're kind of just setting yourself up for fucking like failure. Yeah. If you're like, I'm going to do this and this and this and this, it's like, what if it doesn't happen? Where are you going to be then? I think it's pointless.
Yeah,
and we're like planning that far ahead because you don't fucking know what's gonna happen, do you? But
and also, I think if you want, like, if you start sort of as young as you have in an industry, you have to be quite careful about like burning out at 26, 27. Don't you?
Yeah.
If you want to be doing it when you're 45,
exactly.
You do have to be a bit careful about.
Like, hence the like earplugs. So, like, it's very boring. But it's like just stuff like that. Exactly. It's like, I think it's different now. You can't be like a fucking rock star and like get pissed all the time, because like you've got to be able to play your gig the next day. And there's so much money and like people have invested stuff like and time into you. It's like you can't just fuck that up. Because
has that changed? You think the music's changed in that way, that it's a lot less?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the reason for it is, but like definitely people now are much more sensible.
Yeah.
Like I think the idea of going on tour is like everyone getting like fucking.
Yeah.
Like fucked every night.
Yeah.
And like playing pissed, and I don't know anybody that drinks while they play.
That's so good.
I'd never drink before I play. I always say it for afterwards.
Yeah.
Then it's like you actually.
The only people I know in comedy who drink and then perform are older people who haven't made it, who are really really bitter about.
Yeah.
And it sort of serves as like a warning to younger people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like. Yeah, like I feel very lucky for the opportunity I've been given, and the last thing I'd want to do is like.
Yeah.
Fuck that. I think the thing looking back is like, I've always had that kind of mentality of like, take it quite seriously when you're the gigs or whatever. But I feel like earlier on I could have probably had more fun.
I
probably could have played pissed and no one would have cared. But it would have been awful. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but you're right to take it seriously, obviously, because there's a lot of, you know, money and.
Yeah.
You don't want to fuck it up, do you?
Yeah, exactly. And like. That, as you say, like when you're on tour, like 23 hours of the day, you do fuck all.
Yeah.
It's like, why do all of that to then just play a shit gig because you got pissed away? I don't know. It's like,
do you find with older, I don't know how much you sort of interact with older musicians, but is it generally like a supportive? Do you find older musicians are supportive of younger guys or?
It's kind of like you just don't really. Like the Stereophonics are like my only interaction with like an older kind of band, and they were lovely. Like And I think the more, like, the less you have to prove, the nicer people are, sort of thing. So they were just, like, lovely, like, got me, like, a bottle of gin on the first night of tour and, like, came and said hello.
Yeah.
And we didn't see them much because they're, like, got a fucking massive arena tour to do. They don't want to be, like, hanging out all the time. But whenever we did see them, they were absolutely lovely. And I've had experiences with smaller acts who are, like, much more, like,
dicks about things.
And it's, like...
It's a, that's so true, yeah.
There's a clear correlation between, like, amount of success and how much of a dick you are, like,
yeah.
The people who are actually successful don't need to be, because they're like,
that's true. The worst, not the worst, but like the people who have been like the most rude are never like the most successful. No. They're always like mid-level people,
and there's a reason, because like, no one fucking likes you,
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I'll be in like dressing rooms with older comics, and they'll be sort of talking about reasons why they didn't make it. And it'll always be like, because they're too old, or they were unlucky, or some producer doesn't like them, or something. And you sort of sit there and you think, do you think it might be to do with the fact that people don't just, they just don't want to hang around with you that much? Because I think that is like quite a lot of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you need people around you so that, like, I don't know, keep you not a wanker.
Like normal mates.
Yeah. Because like, so I'm like the only one out of my mates that's living in London. But going back to Hartford only takes, like, an hour on the train maximum.
Yeah.
So I go back, like, I've been going back a fair bit. Because after touring, like, being away for so long, I was like, I just want to see, like, my mates and just sit in the pub and do nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're great. They're just, like, whenever you go back, just nothing's changed. But, like, the nicest way possible.
I sort of find with my, like, old school mates... They like actively don't give a shit about what I'm doing. Like, it's not like it's. I think it's really nice, but most of, like, my family and whatever, always asking questions. But when I go to the pub with mates or something, they don't. There's no questions. If I mention something, they don't. They just sort of like no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
And it's really nice, I think.
Yeah, I've made it onto the jukebox in one of the local pubs in Hartford.
Oh yeah.
Which I'm quite pleased about that. So they sometimes send me Snapchats of them like.
Putting it on.
Yeah. I was in there the other day when I went back and they're like, oh, we're going to put it on. I was like, please, don't do that. They just like give me shit for it. But
yeah.
That's good. That's what you need, I think.
So what's going on for the rest of the year then?
Yeah, so I like making the album. To be fair, you've got a lot of the album recorded already. It's kind of just like getting those last key tracks or whatever, and it's kind of, so it kind of all fits together.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a lot more writing and then record it. And then I'm kind of, festival season is kind of starting to like start.
Yeah.
So playing a festival called Live at Leeds this Saturday, which is kind of like just a little, just only in Leeds, like in the city centre.
Yeah.
Like, all the venues kind of have music on, one of those sort of things. But yeah, so then it's kind of like gradually building up. So like most weekends over the summer, I think I've got festivals.
Is that sort of mainly in the UK or all over?
Yeah, all in the UK at the moment. That's definitely the focus. Because again, I've only played one gig abroad, I think, in the Netherlands, which is really cool, but it's just like a lot more effort to get everybody over there.
Sure,
Manchester, whatever. Just a lot of gigs, and then hopefully do like headlines. I've not done a headline tour yet. So hopefully, I think we've got one planned for September, but that might change, that might move. But
yeah,
that's kind of the thing that I'm learning to get better at, is kind of like accepting that things aren't like, you can get told a date and that's very easily done.
Yeah.
So just like don't get too like set on.
I learned very early on not to tell people about things until it's actually like happened. Because there's a few examples of things that I was told were going to happen.
Yeah.
And then I then told everyone and then it didn't happen. And then
so
you just look like a dick.
Yeah.
It's happened to me like multiple times.
It's happened to me so many times. It was the same with this album. So like I told my dad and he was like, oh, like obviously so chuffed.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't tell anyone. He didn't, to be fair. But then the next week, I was like, oh, it's not coming out there anymore. He's like,
oh,
okay, mate.
I know.
It's always the biggest, like, coolest stuff that's, like, potentially going to happen.
Yeah,
and just, that's always the stuff that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's so many things that it relies on happening, like, going well, or, like, getting approved. And then it just doesn't happen. You're like, oh, fuck. Like, I'm going to be on FIFA. And it's like, oh, the FIFA's out. You're not on it. It's like, yeah.
Was that going to happen? Were you going to be on FIFA?
I think so, at one point.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
I was on Need for Speed this year.
Really?
Which is pretty cool.
That's great.
I'm like not a gamer at all, but I still like...
No. FIFA's like the only game I can play, really.
I'm like... It was on the Rat Boy tour. Our new guitarist is like well into his football.
Yeah.
When he first joined, we were like, "Oh, do you like football?" He was like, yeah, kind of." And it turns out he's like a fucking massive football. We had a gig in Newcastle, and we had a day off the next day, and he went on a tour of the Newcastle like football ground by himself. Yeah. He sent a picture to the group chat of like him with his flag up.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm not a massive."
Yeah, he's like loves it. He lives for it.
We had this thing on tour. Couple of years ago, it's like it looks like a briefcase, but like an industrial level briefcase.
Yeah.
It's like huge, and you like unfold it, and inside is a screen and like FIFA setup. So the guy who I was supporting used to take this around to the hotels, and then there was one time we were in like North Wales somewhere, and we were sitting in his hotel room at like 11 a.m. with all the curtains drawn, and he was ordering room service, and I was setting up FIFA. And he's like Rob Beckett. He's a very like successful comic.
He did that thing on YouTube where it was like
the FIFA thing. He's obsessed, right? So I'm setting up FIFA and he's calling room service, and we've got all the curtains drawn and we're in like dressing gowns. And I looked at him and I was like, this is weird, man. And I was like, you're a successful for someone who's starting out. I'm aspiring to be like you, and this is your life, and it's shit. I don't want this.
That's what I mean, is that that's the reality of touring.
Yeah.
I'm not like that surprised. It's like sitting, like, so yeah, in the van, there's like always a TV. So there's always like a, and they always have like a PS, something or other.
Yeah.
And they always have FIFA. Like, no matter, they don't have any games other than FIFA. So my guitarist is always like on the FIFA. But
yeah.
I like watching films in the van. It's like a much more sociable thing to do, I think, than like one person
in the
FIFA.
Van, in the back of a van.
Spend so much time in the back of that. I got a cold on the Rat Boy tour because I like it was freezing cold in the van, and the only heat was like the front, like the driver's seat heaters. So you'd have to have them full, so he'd be like dripping with sweat, and in the back it'd like be tepid, like I don't know if tepid is the right word, but like very lukewarm.
Fuck, man. I did when I was like 17, and I was doing all these like open spots, which is like where you don't get paid or anything for gigs, and this guy who used to run shows, I don't know what happened to him, but he got about four of us together and he was like, I've got this gig in Derby, do you all want to do it this Saturday? And we were all like, yeah, great. And he was like, I'll give you 40 quid or something. So we were like, amazing. And then he was like, I'll sort out travel, so don't worry about getting there, I'll sort it out. Just meet me here in London and we'll leave together.
Yeah.
So we were all like, great. And we turned up and he'd hired this white van, but it wasn't like a van, like a minibus van with seats in the back. It was like a transit van with like no windows in the back and just like a floor.
What, so you just had to sit in the
So he was like, we were like, right. And he was like, I wanted to get a minibus, but I couldn't, the only thing they have is a van, like a transit van.
What, so just like flat?
So four of us like sat on the floor in a windowless van.
That must have been horrible.
It felt like we'd been kidnapped.
Yeah.
Going to Derby, doing this shit gig and then driving
back. Yeah,
that's like breaches human rights. It's the sort of thing that, like, if we got pulled over and he looked in the back and there's, like, four young boys sitting on the floor.
Christ.
It's fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
There we go, Ethan Barnett there, otherwise known as 10 Tons. I thought that was a great chat. I really enjoyed that. So thank you very much to Ethan for coming round and talking to me. And thank you to Will Shahada for the editing. And thank you to Joel Grove for producing the show and my manager, Rick Hughes, for all your help with it. And thank you to you for listening. We will be back next Monday with another guest.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.